Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca. Mesut Özil.
After 3 months out, you can see he's a little bit rusty, but football plays it down the wing to football. He crosses it. There's football. He's football the football. Oh, yes.
This is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunner Blog. James, guess what?
What?
Goodly morning.
Goodly morning.
Goodly morning.
Morning indeed.
Do you want me to explain why it's a goodly morning?
I mean, because football's back, maybe?
Yeah, yeah, exactly that. Look, leaving aside what a big bag of shit last night was, from an Arsenal perspective, for all kinds of reasons that we are going to delve into on this podcast, we have football and football-related things to talk about again after 3 months where we've just sort of had to make stuff up and just deal with the bits and pieces, the sort of tiny little nuggets of football information that we have. Football was back in, like, it was full-on Arsenal again last night. I didn't enjoy much of it, I have to say, but I enjoy the fact that this morning we can get into it. I think I sent you a message last night before kickoff. When we got the squad and there was no Mesut Ozil again, you know, this is something we'll talk about. And I sent you a message saying something along the lines of, we haven't even kicked a ball yet and we've got like loads to talk about. And then all that stuff happened on the pitch. So here we are. It's all feeling quite goodly to me from that perspective anyway.
Yeah, it was good to have football back. Did you venture as far as watching Aston Villa versus Sheffield United?
I was cooking in the kitchen, so I had it on the tablet in the kitchen. I was sort of half watching it and, you know, really enjoyed the Hawkeye / VAR shenanigans that went on. That was an amazing piece of football, whatever you want to call it, just banter, whatever the fuck, a mess. I don't know, but you know.
My favourite aspect of that was the information that the referee's watch buzzed during half time to tell him it was a goal.
Yeah, did it not come out that they buzzed it to test it to see if it was working, and it did buzz or something. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but what a fucking disaster from a Sheffield United point of view. You know, what if that moment costs them a place in Europe next season?
Yeah, well, I mean, Sheffield United, it was who fell foul of the whole Carlos Tevez-ness and ended up in the courts of arbitration and all sorts. And I mean, who knows? It could go the same way. I mean, a massive decision probably the only interesting thing in that game, as far as I could tell.
Yeah, they didn't seem to have a great deal going for it. Whereas Manchester City versus Arsenal,
the circus is in town.
Look, where do we even start? The Ozil stuff, I think we can do later, right?
Okay.
We've got some questions.
Yeah,
about
he was
that.
Somewhat overshadowed, wasn't he? His thunder was stolen.
Unbelievable. Yeah, unbelievable, though, that, you know, all the stuff that's been going on in the world, and all of a sudden, all the focus from an Arsenal fan's point of view, of course, is back on Mesut Ozil, and he's not in the squad, and why he's not in the squad. I mean, 9 subs, and you can use 5, and he's not in the squad for tactical reasons. Okay, right. We will discuss that a bit later on. I'm sure we have a question or two about that. But let's talk about the team that Mikel Arteta did pick. What are your thoughts on that? Because, you know, the omission of Ozil is one thing, but there were other things that we can look at. You know, Pablo Mari at centre half. We had Bukayo Saka starting on the right hand side. Eddie Nketiah starting up front. Joe Willock starting in midfield. What were your thoughts on that lineup, and what were potentially Arteta's thoughts or plans based on that?
Yeah, look, it was a... I saw a lot of predicted teams doing the rounds before this game, and I don't think I saw any that got it right, which tells you that it was a very bold selection. I mean, my first takeaway from it was it's a young team. It's a really young team. And maybe that was a factor in the selection. I think there is a possibility that Arteta looked at how little preparation Arsenal had and thought, I'm going to go with people who I think are young, who I think are fit, who might have the legs we might need if we don't get the ball off Manchester City, which is how it kind of panned out. But I also couldn't help but look at it and think, it's bad news for Alex Lacazette to be behind Eddie Nketiah there. It's bad news for Nicolas Pepe to be behind Bukayo Saka. And there were a couple of others like that. You know, even Guendouzi alongside Xhaka, you think, well, he could have gone with Sabars, but there's a bit of a cloud over his head. And maybe, you know, some of the players whose future is in question played into their selection. Sabars not starting, and David Luiz, of course, not starting. Although he did replace him with Pablo Mari, who's not exactly a cert to be here in the future either. So, yeah, I mean, it was a really bold selection, one that had one eye on the future and one that incurred an element of risk, certainly. I mean, what was your response to it?
Yeah, it was pretty similar in that, you know, he is, I think, looking to the future. I take what you mean about Pablo Mari. We haven't seen anywhere near enough of him to make a decision about whether he's going to be good enough or not. But, you know, he's 26 years of age, so he represents something of a future. David Luiz, 33 years of age, with everything that's gone on, certainly does not, you know? So that played into that. I mean, I completely agree with you about Pepe, and I agree with you about Lacazette. It doesn't augur well for their futures based on the team selection. And I just, you know, I have to say that this isn't a game that I thought we were going to win. It's a game I thought we would lose. It's a game I expected us to lose. And the fact that we lost, you know, of course it's frustrating. And the circumstances in which it happened lead to these talking points and these sort of emotions rising up. But, you know, stepping back from it, you know, this isn't a game which, you know, really has wounded me in any way. If anything, it has simply just reinforced some of the things that we already knew. And we can come back to those. The other thing I think it's fair to say is that losing Granit Xhaka, who's one of our most experienced players, after 3 or 4 minutes was unfortunate and probably had a significant impact on the way that we were set up or what Arteta's plans were. And similarly, losing Pablo Mari to injury after about 20 minutes. So when you lose two players to injury in the opening 20 minutes, playing against a team as good as Man City, in the circumstances in which we're playing them, you know, coming off this 3-month break because of COVID-19, you know, the fitness issues and sharpness and all of that kind of stuff, against a team that is much, much better than you anyway. You know, whether you've got this sort of equalization of fitness and everything else, City are just better than we are. There's a, you know, we can all see that. We all know that. The gap between us and them is huge. So, you know, with all those circumstances and with everything that went on in the game, you know, I'm not losing my reason over last night's result. But it does sort of tell me or reinforce some things that we already knew.
Yeah, look, I think given everything that's gone on, it's impossible to not return to football with a sense of perspective, right? And I think most Arsenal fans really are able to put this result in perspective. We were playing against a team who are a lot better than us. I mean, some of the players they've got in that team, you know, I don't want to spend too long eulogising it, but a guy like Kevin De Bruyne, I mean, we've not got anyone close to that level, and that was pretty evident, I thought.
Yeah.
During the game, you make a good point.
Go on.
Oh, sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, even David Silva, you know, winding down is sort of on a different level.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think we were never really particularly likely to get anything there, but, you know, the injuries certainly didn't help. I mean, our best period was probably the opening 10, 15 minutes or so. And then after that, it just seemed like we didn't progress the ball, really. We didn't get our attacking players into the game whatsoever. I mean, Aubameyang, Willock, Saka, we just didn't really see those guys. And I actually think probably the loss of Xhaka was fairly important in that respect, in that he's kind of key to us moving the ball up the pitch, and he just wasn't there. I think Ceballos did okay. But, you know,
Shaq is a bit more structural, isn't he? You know, Ceballos likes to flit around and he likes to sort of go where the ball is and what have you, where Shaq just gives you a little bit of balance in that midfield, particularly alongside Guendouzi, who's a bit sort of all over the place in terms of the way that he plays too.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I had someone who's not an Arsenal regular watcher text me and say, sort of, where is Guendouzi playing? Is he playing number 10 kind of thing? And I was like, no, he just runs around a lot. And that is his style. And actually, I thought he had a pretty decent first half and he had a pretty good performance against Man City at the Etihad, I think it was last season. But he just got overrun. And I think the other thing I was going to say, what was I going to say? The defending, the passing. I don't know. I think that was kind of it. Oh, that was it. Arteta's team shape, it was a little bit different, really, to what we've seen. You know, previously on Arsenal, as they say.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Notice that, all right. Previously on Arsenal. Wonder where that came from.
Where's our 10%? I don't know.
But it's gone into, never mind. I was going to say something there.
Someone's got it. Mr. 10%.
Someone's got it, yeah.
But there was a very clear sort of pattern to Arsenal's play, and, you know, some felt it was a bit predictable, but it was kind of this lopsided attack that was reliant on Bukayo Saka overlapping. And, you know, we didn't necessarily see that, partly because Saka went off and didn't drop in. I guess we don't know if we would have done, but this was a more conventional 4-2-3-1 to my mind. And part of that convention was having a conventional left back, Kieran Tierney, in there. And I think if you're looking for positives from the night, I thought his performance was actually really pretty good, especially before he had to fill in at centre-half. And the fact that he came through unscathed in a game in which, you know, certain other players didn't, that is a piece of good news for Arsenal.
Yeah, yeah. Look, and I think if you are looking for positives from last night, there were some in the sense that Bellerin and Tierney did 90 minutes each after struggling, you know, with injury for most of the season. So that's a positive thing, you know, assuming that they don't feel the effects of that too much for Saturday against Brighton. Bernd Leno, look, a brilliant shot stopper, made some incredible saves last night. The flip side of that, of course, is that when your goalkeeper is that busy, you've got problems. And I just thought as well that there were one or two moments within the opening 15, 20, maybe 25 minutes where potentially we could have caused City some problems with the right pass. There was one with Kieran Tierney, I think, where maybe it was just his body shape wasn't quite right to play the ball in behind for Aubameyang. I'd have to watch it again just to double check that. But that felt like if the right pass was on, or maybe if Tierney was, you know, three or four or five games into, you know, this period, you're just that little bit more sharp. You're a little bit more aware. You can see things that, you know, perhaps you don't see when you're playing your first game for over 3 months. For Tierney, what is it? His first game since November or something, or when did he do his injury? It was before Christmas, you know, so that was his first game for over 6 months, you know, so I can excuse him there, but I just think there were a couple of moments where perhaps if we'd been sharper, we might have caused City some problems. Nketiah had a half chance, didn't he, early on, and put it wide. Yeah. And, you know, I don't think it was really anything more than a half chance, but there were just some movements and some, you know, some bits and pieces that we could take positives from. But then I think the injury to Pablo Mari had a pretty significant effect on the team, because, you know, I saw David Luiz come on and I'm not going to say my heart sank, but I feel like we play differently with Luiz on the pitch. You know, that if we are a little bit afraid of what he might do, I wonder, is that the same, you know, as his teammates? And it looked to me, and I could be wrong here, and I didn't look at heat maps or anything like it, the arrival of Luiz coincided with Arsenal sitting a bit more deep. Therefore, City were able to exert a lot more pressure. They had that spell, didn't they? You know, between the half-hour mark and halftime, where I was thinking, well, fuck, if we can just get to halftime, if we just get to halftime and don't concede a goal, this is something Arteta can address at the break, because we really need to, because we are under an awful lot of pressure against, you know, a very good team. As it happened, we didn't get to halftime.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. The injuries played a massive part in kind of changing the game, particularly the introduction of Luiz. It was interesting, actually. I was texting a couple of physio people last night, and they were sort of saying that these injuries weren't necessarily ones that you would expect off the back of the layoff. Do you know what I mean? That these weren't the kind of muscular things that we expected to get. They were both a bit unfortunate in that they kind of were twists or came after collisions. So Arsenal were pretty unlucky in that respect. Yeah, I think Luiz coming on did change things. And I think that really, if he wasn't picked, we know, and we've spoken so many times, and to be fair, Mikel Arteta kind of made it clear last night to an extent how highly he thinks of David Luiz. But he does, though, doesn't he? And well, we talked about it a week ago. I think you and I said, I'm really conscious that we shouldn't be hypocritical, because a week ago we were saying, if you've got to keep one of Luiz, Mustafi, Socrates, you'd probably keep Luiz. I think it's easy to flip on it and be like, oh, yeah, we've always said he's shit, but I haven't.
No, that's true. That's true. And I think under Arteta, he was improved. But, you know, I think last night was... I don't know what last night was. That was a return to the David Luiz. I was going to say David Luiz of old, but the David Luiz we saw under Unai Emery, if you like.
That is always going to happen, isn't it? Like, David Luiz is going to give you, well, previously about 10 good games, then one bad one. The problem at Arsenal is there are less. The ratio of mistakes at Arsenal from Luiz is much, much, much higher.
Well, does that not suggest, you know, that despite what we said last week, the evidence is telling us that this is a player, because of his age and the period he's in his career, he's in very sharp decline? You know,
very possibly.
Is that not a possibility in that he's conceded 4 penalties at Arsenal this season? He has been sent off twice. And you could argue maybe on both occasions he was a little bit unlucky. I mean, the foul on Mahrez was probably a foul, but, you know, there was one on Nketiah which was quite similar. Up the other end of the pitch, which wasn't even given as a free kick, you know. And I'm not trying to excuse Luiz or anything like it. You know, the way he defends lends itself to referees making those kind of decisions, and they're making them more and more, and they're penalising him more and more. You know, the defending at times this season has been crazy. But I wonder, James, what's your thoughts on if Mikel Arteta thinks highly of David Luiz, does it say more about David Luiz or the options Mikel Arteta feels he has available to him at centre-half right now?
I think it says more about the latter, but I also think it raises an interesting question as to, given that he thinks so highly of him, why didn't he play him? And I think that that opens up a whole other conversation about David Luiz's current situation. And I think that is really interesting. You know, Luiz's interview after the game, whatever you may think of it, and he did slightly throw those above him under the bus there, which I'm sure certain people won't have minded. But I think of Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's weird, awful performance at Liverpool. And I kind of think, why... What is Luiz in a sort of very odd situation where he literally doesn't know if he's at Arsenal for 2 weeks, 2 months, or 12 months right now? And you know, I know that doesn't excuse his mistakes, and I know he's made plenty of mistakes when he's not been in that contractual situation, but my hunch is that that uncertainty is a big factor in why he didn't start the game. And I don't think he's someone, you know, we know concentration is an issue for him. He's not someone, I think part of the reason you probably felt so sick to your stomach when he was coming on is because he's not someone you imagine picking up the pace of a game and immediately attuning to it.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. But he's also 33 years of age, hugely experienced. You know, he should be able to compartmentalize what's going on off the pitch in terms of his contract, in terms of his future. Like, you know, it can't be that much of a worry for him, you know, that in the context of a game of football, his mind is wondering, oh my goodness, what's going to happen with my contract here? Where am I going to be playing football? You know, you've got to kind of live in the moment when you're a player. You know, you don't think about that sort of stuff. And I thought the interview afterwards was quite strange, you know, to be going on about his contract and the decisions that he was making. I have the quotes here. Let me see if I can just dig them up, because they're worth... I mean, some people will say, look, he was good, he fronted up, he took the blame for the defeat, etc., etc. But then he sort of was going on about his contract a bit. You know, I should have taken a different decision in the last 2 months and I didn't. It's about my contract, if I stay here or not. I have 14 days left to be here and that's it. So today was my fault. And when he was asked, you know, if he wanted to stay or what sort of a decision he should have made, he said a different decision to try and decide my future, to try and decide as early as possible. But I didn't. I don't want to use that as an alibi or an excuse. It's my fault and that's it. You know, it's...
I mean, it's pretty difficult to unpick, I think, isn't it? Because
what do you think the situation is? Do you think it's a case that Arteta wants to keep him, but on high they're saying this is too expensive, we can't give him another 12 months, you know, even based on what he's doing on the pitch, we can't really commit to this guy for another 12 months. You know, is Luis, you know, is he happy enough here? Does he want to stay? You know... If there's a decision to be made, what is the decision? What is the decision that he didn't make, you know, that he could have made? Is it to go to another club? Did he have another offer? You know, what do you think is going on?
I think that Luis and his representatives were quite content with Arsenal saying that they weren't going to talk about these contract issues until they had a greater sense of financial perspective. Mm. You know, in the midst of... Really, this ought to have been negotiated kind of when coronavirus was sort of at its peak as a crisis. People didn't know how long it would be going on, if football was coming back, what the financial ramifications would be. And so I think that Luis and Jurabchin probably were quite happy to let Arsenal kind of knock it down the line and think, well, look, we'll get to this conversation. I don't think they envisaged the conversations being dragged out quite as long as they have. And they're not the only ones. You know, it's also Danny Ceballos in this position. It's also Pablo Marie, yeah. Cedric. There are four players who do not know if they're at Arsenal for 2 weeks or the remainder of the season or beyond that. And, you know, Arsenal, I suppose, are having to look at the economics. You know, they're having to look at the numbers and say, maybe we can't justify this. Even if Arteta likes Luis, you know, how much does he like Luis? Mm. Does he like Luis enough that it means he can't bring in a player this summer, for example?
Yeah. I mean, where do we go with that then? I mean, do we just sort of say, well, look, this is an unfortunate side effect of the consequences or the circumstances that we're dealing with COVID-19, with the football lockdown, with nobody really knowing when football was coming back, although we have known for what, about a month at least, that this game was going to be taking place on this date. And therefore, there needed to be some clarity regarding the futures of some of the players who are in this position. Luis, Suarez, Marie, and Ceballos. So, I mean, is it a failure of those on high to sort these situations out? Or is it simply a case that these are really complicated, difficult situations that nobody's had to deal with before, and therefore we have to give the people who should be sorting this out a little bit of a pass? I mean, where do you stand on that?
I think, of course, it's a little bit of both. I think the situation with Arsenal, I think, is kind of trickier because there are also contracts like Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, like Bukayo Saka, that might have an impact on the financial situation. You know, you might be looking at the 200 grand that's currently allocated to David Luiz and thinking, could that be reallocated elsewhere? So although we talk about four players, there are really six major issues on the table, I would say, at a minimum. And, you know, of course it would be better if Arsenal had sorted that out sooner. I think the bigger question that I'll be asked to the people above Arteta is, I understand your exasperation with David Luiz, absolutely. But every single person in football knew absolutely who David Luiz was when Arsenal signed him.
Uh-huh.
Like, we knew. Now, listen, he is making mistakes at a higher rate at Arsenal than he did at Chelsea, OK? I think that I saw great numbers about it, which is like... Oh, yeah, a red card every 160 games with Chelsea. It's every 13 games with Arsenal. A penalty every 53 games with Chelsea, once every 6.5 games with Arsenal. And listen, I think that that is down to two things. I think it is David Luiz, you know, being at the tail end of his career and dropping off significantly. I also think we've seen a lot of defenders come into this Arsenal team, this Arsenal squad, and look worse than they did previously. There are still big structural issues in this team that affects centre-halves dramatically. But nonetheless, when we lost Koscielny, everybody knew that David Luiz was not the same sort of defender. And everybody knew he would make mistakes, that once every, whether it's 6 games or 10 games or 20 games, his head's going to go and he's going to implode. And that's just what he does. I am frustrated, but I can only be so frustrated with him because he is 33. He's been doing this his whole career. And we knew that. And we chose him. So, and I think that's where the questions should be asked, really.
So it's sort of like buying a snake and leaving it in a room with your children and then castigating the snake when he eats one of them.
And the snake is a really nice snake. It's seemingly the friendliest snake. It's always doing press conferences and interviews.
Everyone loves the snake.
Going to Rwanda and shaking hands and doing photos. And, you know, it's kind of, everyone loves the snake. The snake's always smiling at the training ground. But at the end of the day, the snake will eat your children.
Yeah.
By the way, I'd suggest that in the Luiz entourage, it's not David that's the snake. But I think, nonetheless, not pointing any fingers. But I think that, I think that's where you have to ask. And there's been a lot of chat about the money involved in signing David Luiz and the money involved in re-signing David Luiz. Mm. And I guess, I mean, looking on the brightest of sides, if Arsenal don't re-sign David Luiz, maybe they've learned a lesson there. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a really good point. And the wider point, of course, is squad building and recruitment and dealing with, putting together a squad that can be competitive. And what we did, I think, on the last podcast, you know, we had a bit of a laugh about it where we said, look at all these central defenders we have, but what is the partnership? How do you make it work? Yeah. And then we said, look at midfield. You know, what is the way to make that work in terms of the personnel that we've got? And then you look at what we've got up front and you look at the question mark over Aubameyang, question mark over Lacazette, question mark over Pepe, question mark over Nketiah. And I don't mean it in a bad way, but just he's at the beginning of his career. So there are things for him to answer. Question mark over Saka and his future. Did I say Pepe already? I mean, £72 million pounds for Pepe. You know, we talk about squad building. Unai Emery wanted, a left footed Premier League ready winger, and Arsenal went, or a left sided Premier League ready winger, and Arsenal went out and bought a right-sided non-Premier League winger for an extraordinary amount of money. Gabriel Martinelli, huge talent, but like, you know, still in the very early stages of his career. Reece Nelson, you know, so there are all these questions. Not like there aren't options and there aren't solutions, but when you look at the squad overall and how it's been constructed and deconstructed as well over the last 18 to 24 months, I think there is where we have to look. Those are, you know, the bells should be ringing there, and people have individual responsibility, managers and coaches and all that kind of stuff. But I think we have to look a bit more organically at, you know, who is in charge of putting this squad together and have they done a good job? And you look at where we are right now, and Shkodran Mustafi is our best available central defender.
Really stuck in your throat there. Really stuck.
No, I was just trying to think of the right way to say it because, you know, Socrates is injured. Luiz is going to be suspended for a couple of games.
Holding didn't make the squad. Didn't Rob make the Holding, 20-man squad.
And he's not injured.
No.
So, you know, there are so many questions over how this group of players has been put together. And I think, you know, my big takeaway from all of this, you know, from this one game and all the questions that it has raised. And as I said, you know, there isn't much that we have learned that's new, but it has reinforced things. My takeaway is it's time to wipe the slate clean and really start again. And I assume you read the interview, the bits and pieces of the interview from Steve Round, Arteta's assistant, and he talked about changing the culture at Arsenal, right?
Yeah.
He wants to instill this new culture. And you can see that there are players who do not fit into that culture. And now, when things are the way that they are in football, with things the way that they are at Arsenal, now is the time to make those changes happen. And it might cost us in the short term, both financially and perhaps on the pitch. But the sooner we make those changes and the sooner Arteta can implement this culture that he wants, which I think is more in line with what we would all like to see from Arsenal, the sooner we start that process, the sooner we can start to close the gap to, you know, the gap is huge to Man City and Liverpool and everything else. We all know that. But the way we can close that gap is by winning the games against Brighton, winning the games against Wolves, winning those games, the sort of bread and butter of the Premier League. And what he needs are players who will buy into what he wants, and those that don't or won't or can't have got to go. Start all over. Now is the time.
Yeah, I was chatting after the game with Amy Lawrence and a couple of other guys from The Athletic, and I forget who said it, but somebody said, and they weren't an Arsenal fan, I don't think, they said Arsenal can't move on until certain players move on.
Mm, absolutely.
And that is the case. And in that sense, I do wonder if, you know, we can lament the uncertainty and not knowing what's happening with all these players and where their future lies. But maybe we should also embrace it. Maybe we should see it as, well, I mean, as Clive on the Arsenal Vision podcast has been saying for many years, blow it up. And maybe we are at sort of detonation point right about now. And maybe the crisis that has enveloped football and all those things, you know, maybe that provides a natural exclamation point for the demolishment of this squad to really begin. I don't know.
Yeah, it does. Because, like, football has never experienced a period like this where everything is in this kind of state of chaos, you know, because of what's happened. And Arsenal have, it's been many years since Arsenal have been at the kind of low we were at in terms of our football performance and our football, you know, where we were in the Premier League, results, confidence, belief, connection with the fans and the club and all those kind of things. Like, it hadn't been that low for decades. And Arteta's come in, he's trying to do a job and he's trying to fix it up. And look, if people want to draw parallels between KSE's 100% ownership of the club and our football performance under the current head of football and think maybe these guys aren't quite the guys to be running our football club, I can see how that happens. But if there's ever an opportunity to sort of say, look, fuck it, this hasn't worked, we did this, it didn't work, we've got to move on, we've got to start anew, start afresh, now is the time. You know?
Yeah.
And that's not based on what we saw last night. Because,
no,
you know, losing to Man City, everybody and their mother expected us to lose to Man City last night. You know? This isn't a shock. It's not a shock result. It's not a shock performance. This is just a consequence of everything that's happened up until now, including the COVID-19 thing. So just go again. Go again.
Yeah, I think we are in that place. I think we are in that place. And sort of what I kind of took away from last night partly was, okay, you know, for all the talk of Champions League or all the talk of European qualification, I don't even think that just pursuing that relentlessly in the short term is really the right thing for Arsenal to do.
Yeah, I mean, the ambition is perfect. To get back into the Champions League, perfect. You know, to ultimately create a team and build a club that can challenge for the Premier League title. Those ambitions, there's nothing wrong with those. But we've got to be realistic about where we are, how long it's going to take us to get there, and how we're going to get there. Short-term fixes will not do anymore.
No, they just tried so many short-term fixes. I mean, Luiz is the most obvious and in some ways the most egregious, but I would argue there are others. You know, Socrates was kind of the same. You know, another example of a player who was brought in older, you know, and we thought, right, hopefully we can just get back into the Champions League. Unai Emery, I think, was in some ways the ultimate short-term fix. Here's a guy with a track record of winning the Europa League, you know, getting teams into the top four or whatever. Mm. Let's go for him. We'll be back in there and then we'll figure out what we're going to do.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to work. We haven't been able to buy our way back in for various reasons. Yeah. We haven't bought the right people necessarily, but now we have to build something. And, you know, Mikel Arteta, I think, was really hurting last night. If you watched his post-match interview,
he
was really not happy. I think he was embarrassed because he was going back to Manchester City, you know, against his mentor. He knows that team inside out. I think he would have really wanted to make an impression. You know, maybe he'd be realistic too, but I think he wanted to make an impression. And I think it would have stung his pride that he didn't. But for all my concerns about the club, I do think, you talk about the creation of a new culture, and I really do think they have a coach who is capable of that, actually. If he's given the appropriate authority and the appropriate backing and time.
Exactly.
And time.
Exactly. I mean, I think you're absolutely right there. Given the authority and given the backing and given the support that is needed to do a job like this, you know, it's easy to get a plasterer in. It's much more difficult to get somebody in to sort of relay the foundations, if you like. Mm-hmm. So he does need, you know, if we want to get back to where we hope this football club can be, you know, like I said to you the other day, I haven't listened to an Arteta interview or read anything that he said that I have found unreasonable or completely egregious or anything like that. Pretty much everything he says I'm on board with, you know, because he sounds like a guy who has high standards, who expects high standards from Arsenal, who wants Arsenal to be at the top level and wants people with him who are prepared to make that happen. Mm. And we think immediately about the people that are on the pitch in that regard, but it works internally as well. Like, we need Absolutely. The people inside the club who are held to those standards as well.
Yeah. And I think if he can, he will push people and hold people to those standards. Mm. I mean, it was really interesting. We did a big profile on him in The Athletic. You probably read it all over Twitter.
I actually, yeah.
But, no, it was fascinating because the feedback was generally great, but there were a couple of people who were like, I mean, this is, you know, where's the dissenting voices here? Where are the people who don't, within the club, who don't rate Arteta, who don't think he's doing a good job? And the honest God truth is, talking to, you know, multiple sources, there aren't really any. Everybody is so impressed by this guy. And where the criticism comes from and where the analysis comes from is from Arteta himself and his coaching staff, who know they've not done anything yet, who know this isn't good enough, and who know the results aren't where they want them to be, and who are intensely self-critical and intensely self-analytical. And that is the kind of character he is. You know, he will be acutely aware after last night of how far away Arsenal are.
Yeah.
And I think more so than in any transfer window we've seen in the last few years, I don't think we can afford the quick fix solution. I don't think Thomas Partey's a lovely idea. I don't think it's going to happen. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to go and buy four £50 million players to transform this team. Mm. I might be wrong, but I really strongly don't think that. So we have to start a project, and that was the message that I took from going back to right to the start, Arteta's team selection, saying, look, this is a long-term thing. Some of these kids are going to develop and be the right guys. Some probably aren't. That's just the way it works. But we have to move on from what hasn't been working.
Mm. There is one thing that we, you know, obviously have to discuss when we talk about moving on, but we will do that in part two. Mikel Arteta says, you know, afterwards, I want to delete this game from the hard drive, is what he said. I think that's fair. Unless you have something else on the game itself that you think we can take away from the performance, the result, the team selection, or anything else, we should go to part two.
Yeah, just on that thing, I suppose, deleting it. I think it is worth us all sort of bearing that in mind. I mean, Arsenal started before most Premier League teams with less preparation. I think most teams will have played more friendly games by the time they play their first Premier League game. In a way, I think it is going to be possible for us to compartmentalise this match, as disappointing as it was. And I do think that, you know, Brighton on Saturday, it's a run of four away games back-to-back, which isn't necessarily ideal, but I think that feels like a much more appealing fixture for this Arsenal team, and hopefully we can kind of restart the season there.
Yeah, like the excitement for football being back was very much tempered by the fact it was Man City, you know. Do you know what I mean? Because it was so difficult. You knew it was going to be so difficult. So the excitement that you felt about football coming back was offset by the knowledge, or at least the feeling that we were going to get beaten, you know. And there's not much to enjoy about being beaten, regardless of how well you can look at the you know, the quality of another team. So I do think Brighton on Saturday is a more appealing prospect, and certainly a game from which I think we might be able to learn more about the future, as opposed to the things that we know we have to move away from. So let's see. Okay, we'll take a break. We're going to come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnerblog and at Arsblog, also on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. James, you're going to the game on Saturday at Brighton.
I am.
You know, what's the situation from your point of view? Because obviously we saw an empty stadium last night. We saw some journalists and we saw some reporters and everything else. But, you know, there must be protocols if they're trying to maintain this kind of clean environment, if you like.
Yeah. I mean, I know, for example, I have to wear a face covering at all times. Mm. I believe I have to fill out a medical questionnaire before I attend. And I think they may even take temperatures of people at some stadiums before they go in, just to make sure that obviously that they're not unwell.
Mm.
So there are also like hand washing stations, I think, scattered throughout stadiums to kind of keep up the safety protocols. It will be a really strange experience. And I just felt like it was important to experience it and sort of try and gain an insight of what it's like to be at these games. If you're lucky enough to be afforded that chance and you feel it's safe to do so, then you got to take it. But I think it would be wrong to say I'm looking forward to it. I'm very curious about what it will be like, but I'm not sure how easy it will be to enjoy it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, just before we go on with the questions, what were your thoughts on experiencing an Arsenal game in the current climate? Because, you know, we've talked before about fake crowd noise, and I think I was watching on one of the Sky Sports channels where they had that on, and I was thinking, I thought this was optional, but there's two Sky Sports football channels. So I'd switched it over to the other one without the crowd noise. I mean, it is weird, isn't it? I mean, I was interested, obviously I was invested in the game, and you know, as an Arsenal fan, you know, I'm much more into watching what's going on than with other teams, but it still felt, I don't know if it was just because of the game that it was against City and everything else, it felt like something was really, really badly missing. And of course it was, you know, the atmosphere, the fans, the supporters of both teams, and you know what that brings to the game, I think, is immeasurable.
Yeah, I mean, I had the crowd noise on for the Villa game, and you know, I thought it was done relatively well. I mean, there were a few teething problems, but for Arsenal I went without it. And I don't know if you identify with this at all, but in a funny sort of way, it kind of made me a bit less nervous about the game. Like, you know, the stakes seemed lower than they ordinarily do in a Premier League game. And
sure,
I think weirdly it's kind of played into me being relatively sanguine about the result, is that, you know, maybe it's just that it kind of felt a bit like a sort of strange friendly being played in a foreign country or something. And so subsequently I didn't necessarily attach as much importance to it. I also felt early on, in a curious way, like it might be helping some of our players. I sort of thought, well, you know, the crowd aren't on their back. When City go forward, it's not sort of amplified. The tempo isn't kicked up by the crowd. I mean, what became clear as the half wore on is that City were perfectly capable of turning up the tempo themselves. And then we really started to struggle. I mean, it was just a very, very different spectacle. And it did feel different to me as well as a fan. Like, I didn't feel the dynamics and the emotion of the game to the same extent. But then how could you?
Yeah, like, yeah, true. Okay, well, look, here's a question to kick it off. And we referenced the Mesut Ozil situation in the first part of the show. 1886 underscore blog, at 1886 underscore blog on Twitter, says, should fans know the truth with the Ozil saga, or are successive managers right to cover up the issue and cite tactical reasons? And there was obviously a bit of, I don't know whether you'd call it hilarity or whatever on Twitter, but, you know, it's very similar to what Unai Emery said when he left Mesut Ozil out of the squad. It was for tactical reasons. Nobody believed that that was the case, and I certainly don't believe that that's the case when Mikel Arteta is talking about it. So how do we find the balance between this ongoing, seemingly never-ending saga with Ozil over the last couple of years anyway, with the need to sort of keep things in-house and do things in a respectful way, with Ozil being our highest paid player and the responsibility that sort of comes with that and the expectation that comes with that. So, you know, where do you stand on all this?
I can't believe we're doing it all again. And yet I absolutely can. I mean, just as a sidebar, by the way, there are some pretty good tactical reasons that you might leave Mesut Ozil out against Manchester City away from home.
Out of the squad entirely?
Well, that's where I think you encounter some problems. But out of the starting 11, certainly, I think there would be a really strong case for that. Yeah, look, I mean, I think clearly something has gone on. Something has changed. Arteta selected him pretty consistently, didn't he, in the Premier League. He was a mainstay in the team. And something between the cease in football and now has changed that. And my understanding is it's something relatively recent, you know, in the last kind of week or so. And I suppose I've always sort of been on the side of the fence that says that Mesut Ozil is, you know, is a problematic figure now at this football club, and has been for some time. And, you know, people really didn't like Unai Emery, so when he didn't pick Ozil, it was Emery's fault. Well, then Freddie Ljungberg didn't pick Ozil, and now Mikel Arteta isn't picking Ozil. I mean, at some point, the weight of evidence makes you think, okay, something is really, really an issue here, no?
Mm. Yeah, there is one common denominator, you know.
And, you know, it's not about talent, I don't think. I think it's about attitude. And I think it's also about this idea that what is Arteta doing? What was his starting lineup? It was a starting lineup for the future. And Ozil is absolutely not the future of this team or of this club. He is seeing out his contract and has been for at least a year now. And it is a shame, I think, actually, because while he is completely professionally entitled to take the money that is earned from him, it just feels unfortunate, doesn't it, that it's kind of played out this way with this intransigence on his side and the club, you know, the club and the coaches seemingly kind of willing to see him go.
Yeah. Like, again, like you said, it's not a question of talent because he is an incredibly gifted football player. You know, some of the things he can do, the vision that he has, you know, the ability is, there's no question about that for me, but it's all to do with the application or the ability to produce. And, you know, we talked about David Luiz being a player in decline and making more mistakes because of that. I think we're looking at Ozil over the last couple of years, you know, his output has declined as well. It's gone off a cliff. And I think you're right as well. You know, look, Emery was a difficult guy for people to get behind, and certainly he wasn't somebody that I connected with. So you could see how, you know, other players and what have you, they might struggle to connect with him as well. But, you know, was it with Freddie Ljungberg that there was the incident when he took Ozil off in a game
and he threw his
gloves, or he kicked his, you know, kicked his gloves away and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, if he's going to behave like that with a guy that he knows is A, a legend of the club, but B, brought in to do a job in a really difficult situation with no help whatsoever. Remember, he had like Per Mertesacker, who's the academy manager, to help him, and a goalkeeping coach, and that was all Freddie had. You know, if you're a senior player and you're taking responsibility, you know, within your role at the club, that's not the way you behave. So if you're going to behave like that, in those circumstances, you know, it probably speaks to much wider problems. And if we're seeing them again now with Arteta, who was a teammate of Ozil, who tried in the pre-lockdown period to reestablish him, if you like, in terms of playing him regularly in the Premier League. He didn't get a great deal out of him in terms of performance. I think there was one assist, wasn't there, in the West Ham game. But, you know, Arteta has tried, and here we are again. Here we go again. And ultimately, when we talk about needing to start afresh and to start over and to move on, as a football club, as a fan base, I think we've, you know, Ozil is one of those players who has to go. And that's not out of personal dislike of Mesut Ozil or anything like it. You know, I've always said that if we could get the sort of performances that we knew he was capable of out of him, it'd be fucking great for us. But Emery couldn't, and Freddie didn't have a great deal of time. He couldn't, and still suffered a little bit from Ozil's personality, if you like, and now it looks like it's happening again with Arteta. And, you know, this is a cloud that's hanging over the club and has been hanging over the club more or less since we gave him that contract. Because literally from the moment we gave him that contract, his output went off the cliff.
And that is on the previous...
Yes, yeah, 100%.
People running the club. I mean, Gazidis was there at the time. And, you know, I think that was a dreadful deal. You know, really has been for Arsenal. And Ozil is getting old and declining on our time and on our money. And I was kind of struck... You know, I think Ozil does a lot of great things off the pitch, certainly. You know, I mean, his charity work and that sort of stuff. I think I've been a bit cynical about him in some respects in the past. And I accept that, you know, he's a good citizen. But his life and his career is entering a different phase now. And it goes well beyond... It's a big thing, you know. There was the story in the break about his contract with Adidas ending, and kind of the Ozil camp's response to that was very much, well, he wants to investigate, you know, managing his own brand and designing his own stuff. And that sounds to me like a player who is very, very clearly thinking about the next period of their life, you know? I just feel that he's someone who is sort of... coming, he knows he's coming towards the end of his elite career, and the problem is it is going to carry on this situation for another 12 months, because I just cannot possibly foresee a situation where he moves on. I really, really can't.
Yeah, we had a question there from Jono, who's at Jump Punch Kick. You've got to say that quite carefully. He said, I know he didn't play, but would you be in favour of the club paying out the last year of Ozil's contract at the end of the season so we can move on from him? I enjoyed having him at the club, but I think the past is holding us back. I mean, do you think there's any realistic way, A, that Arsenal could make that happen from a financial point of view, or B, reach some sort of compromise deal with Ozil? Because, like, can he be enjoying any of this? Or does he, you know, is it a case that it just doesn't matter to the extent that he's happy or willing to see out the last 12 months, you know, at a club where he's, A, not really needed, not particularly wanted, not necessary. You know, his agent has always talked about how much he loves football, how much he loves playing football. I mean, as much as anything, from his own point of view, wouldn't it be better to rediscover some of that joy somewhere else for a few years and remind people and maybe even remind himself of what football has done for him and what he's brought to football, you know, when he was one of the top players in Europe.
Maybe. But I mean, I do wonder, after what happened with Germany and all that, if there's an extent to which Mesut Ozil's relationship with football is not what it was.
Mm.
And that's speculation on my part, but I look at a guy who has, at a young age, played for Real Madrid, arguably the biggest club in the world, who at a relatively young age won the World Cup, reached the summit of the game, sort of achieved everything, presumably, that he might have dreamt that he would achieve.
Yeah.
And then went through this very traumatic experience with the German national team. And he's just in a different place in his life now. You know, he married recently became a father as well. You know, we never know to what extent these things might influence, you know, how they feel about their playing career, whether it just becomes a job, whether it just becomes, you know, a means to provide. But I do feel that I wish that hunger was there from him, but I'm just not sure it is. I can't be too angry at him for that. You know, I kind of get it.
Yeah, I'm not angry. I'm just kind of a little bit bored by it and exasperated by it. You know, I just feel like the contract we gave him is a millstone around the neck of the football club. Like, we're walking along in chains to a certain extent. And I'm not saying for even a second that all the things that are wrong with Arsenal have to do with Mesut Ozil or giving Mesut Ozil that contract. But it feels like something we need to liberate ourselves from in order to start again.
That's very true. You know, that sense of Arsenal can't move on until some players move on. That's been true at Arsenal for a really long time. And in fairness to Sanjay and the rest of the gang, I think they've made it pretty clear that they don't really want him around. It may be Arteta is of the same mind. The only thing I would sort of put as like a coda on this is Arteta can set very high standards and is not quick to let people know when they haven't met them. He is quick
to let people know, you mean?
Sorry. He is quick.
Yeah.
Exactly. But he is also quick, I think, to potentially forgive them and grant a reprieve if he feels it's appropriate.
Yeah, you know, fair point.
Danny Ceballos is the one I always think of, you know, was criticised for his attitude, etc. And then, you know, as Arteta's put it himself, he trained like an animal and was back in the team. There is a way back, potentially, for Ozil. But like you, I kind of am a bit sort of exhausted by it. And even if there is a way back, it's only for another 12 months anyway. Mm. It's not the future, is it?
No, I mean, and I think even if you were able to sort of make the case that, look, having Ozil around for another 12 months, we have a, you know, this talent within the squad. We also have this experience that he can bring, you know, as somebody who can help and guide some of the younger players and some of the younger talents within the team. If you could make that kind of case, it'd be easier to swallow. But I'm not sure that's even it. What are the young players learning from Mesut Ozil? You know, I'm sure, look, again, yeah, like Luis, he's popular. People like him. He seems like a nice guy on the training ground. But if you were looking for a player to provide an example for the young talents that we have at this football club, I don't think he would be it, you know?
No, absolutely not. Right, let's have another question. I mean, this one from at InvinciBlog is not messing around. Do we just cut our losses and sell Pepe now?
No, I don't think so.
You don't sell your house at the bottom of the market. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's part of the thinking. Yeah, that's part of my thinking. Like, it would be a really bad time to sell, you know, just from a purely financial perspective, which isn't to say I'm convinced by Pepe the player and Pepe the signing. You know, I think if we're going to talk about three managers over the course of the season having doubts about Mesut Ozil, the same is true for Nicolas Pepe. Because
very, very true. Yeah, good point.
Emery clearly did and said it. Freddie did and said it. Mikel Arteta did and said it. You know, so it hasn't even been private reservations. They've made some of these reservations public. The fact that he wasn't in the squad last night, the fact that he wasn't in the team last night, I guess you could say raises a question mark. The fact that he didn't even get on raises a question mark. The only sort of thing that I would say is that it was his second season at Lille when he really kicked off. So he did have a kind of indifferent first campaign at Lille.
Yeah.
It also wasn't a campaign in which Arsenal went fucking down the toilet, as we did under Emery. It wasn't a campaign when we had a, you know, Lille had a temporary manager. I don't think it wasn't a campaign where they hired a rookie coach or anything like that. And it certainly wasn't a campaign which stopped for 3 months because of a worldwide pandemic. So sure. I think the more time goes on, the more you can question the wisdom of the deal. But I do still think there's time for it to be put right. And I don't think we have quite enough incontrovertible evidence that this is not going to work out. I mean, I still think there's a chance it could. But I mean, again, I'm not going to put a great deal of money on it.
No, I think you don't sell now because, A, what do you get? His reputation is worse than it was 12 months ago. The transfer market is certainly deflated compared to what it was 12 months ago.
Mm.
I think there is pressure on the club to try and make this work. I mean, it's a heavy, heavy price tag round the neck of the people making the decisions on the executive side about transfers if it doesn't work. And one thing that was really clear, actually, in talking to people at Arteta and Emery, is, and Emery made pretty clear himself, the head coach is a part of the process for recruitment, but it is not on them. Do you know what I mean? It's very clearly on the people above. And I think Pepe, it's a really fascinating one. Because again, I mean, we can see he's got ability, can't we?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, you definitely can. I mean, you look at some of the goals that he scored, the free kicks. You know, the way we saw him play for Lille, I mean, he came in and was asked to play in a different way at Arsenal. So again, you're looking at the strategy, the recruitment strategy, if you like. Like, why did we buy this player to fit into a team that does this when he was a player who thrived in a team that did that? You know what I mean? So, but there's definitely some talent there. But again, it comes down to how Mikel Arteta views it and where he sees a place for him in his team. I mean, it's not, what's the word I'm looking for here? I'm not blind to the fact that he picked a left-footed player on the right-hand side last night.
Mm.
But it wasn't Pepe.
Yeah.
So,
but, you know, whatever you may think of Saka being asked to play that position, if you're asking me to pick one of them on form, you know, you do go for Saka, I think. I think.
Well, I mean, I would probably play Saka on the left.
Yeah, so would I. So would I.
So,
which, yeah. But, I mean, Arteta, you know, he's got this preference, hasn't he, for Aubameyang on the left. So it's a really interesting one, Pepe. I mean, the other thing to say is that do you give any credence to the idea? I saw some people sort of suggesting a little bit of a conspiracy theory about the team selection, that Arteta looked at the two games this week, decided Saturday was the winnable one, and therefore Luiz, Pepe, Lacazette would all have played on Saturday and that would be the stronger team.
I don't know. I mean, we'll find out on Saturday. I mean, Luiz can't play now because he's got a two-game ban.
Have one game, I think, left before his contract would expire.
Yeah, look, I think however realistic we were about our chances in that game, I don't think Mikel Arteta went to Man City going, well, we're going to get beaten anyway, so I'll just play some players. Doesn't make any difference. You know, I think he sent a team out or picked a team that he thought could get some kind of a result against Man City. And of course, his game plan was blown up inside 20 minutes with the two injuries and, you know, the catastrophe that was David Luiz on the night. But I don't think, like, if he thought Lacazette was a better option for scoring him a goal, he'd have picked him. If he thought Pepe was going to do better against, you know, Mendy on that side, I think he would have picked him. You know, this was him returning to his old club. I think it was important for him to try and get a result. So I don't think he just sort of picked a team for, you know, with Saturday in mind. He must have thought about Saturday to an extent, but I just wonder if he thought maybe he could rotate things a little bit differently. You know, he's been really unfortunate, hasn't he, in the games that he's managed with us, you know, in terms of how many red cards we've got and how many players have picked up injuries. I mean, Xhaka ended up being stretchered off. I mean, he's not the first player under Arteta that's had a, you know, looks like a serious injury.
I think that's a bad injury. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, from what I heard, it's not at all a good one. So he could be out for some time. He's definitely been unfortunate. I personally think, I don't see it that way. I don't think this was a team that was kind of geared to focus on Saturday at all. But there will be rotation in this period, almost certainly. And, you know, I think Pepe probably will get some time. Did he get off the bench yesterday?
No. No, he brought on Nelson, Maitland-Niles and who was the other one?
It wasn't Martinelli either, was it? Because we had a few questions about that. I forget who the final change was. Don't know.
Don't know. I'm trying to
think. Too many subs in the game. Hard to keep track.
Yeah. It was Lacazette. There you go. Shows what impact.
That's right.
He made.
By the way, Keir Jurabchin's just spoken to TalkSport. And he said, the situation from Arsenal's point of view will be resolved this week. Not just David Luiz's situation. There are several issues within the whole structure that will be resolved.
Well, I mean, that's inevitable because there are rules outlined by the Premier League which say by June 23rd, players who are in the situation with the contracts like Ceballos, Pablo Mari, Suarez and Luis have got to be resolved by that point, one way or the other. So this is not like, this is not anything based on last night. This is just what Arsenal have to do anyway. So,
Yeah, it's a very, I mean, look, it, I mean, it'll be a newsworthy few days.
Well, you, here, let me ask you this. Would you extend Luis to the end of whatever's left of this season? Would you?
So what have we got? We've got Pablo Mari and we don't know how long he's out.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to make a decision on extending him anyway. I imagine that will happen. Then we've got Mustafi.
Mm-hmm. Socrates, who is injured.
Socrates, who's got like a, we think maybe like a 2-week injury.
Mm-hmm. Which is a lot of games within two weeks, you know?
Some guy called Rob Holding, who I don't remember really.
And that's it. And that's it. We've got Callum Chambers who's injured, and then you're looking at where if you have to go further down, you're looking at
something
like
Zach Medley. Yeah. Training. Yeah, yeah, he's been training with the squad. I think. Do you know what? I would extend him.
Like I said, I don't think he's got a future. I don't think our future should involve David Luiz. But I think in the very short term, there's not a great deal that we can do. You know, we've got 10 games or 9 more games and maybe 3 games in the FA Cup. So unless he's going to go all in with somebody like Zach Medley, I don't know that we've got much choice in terms of extending Luiz until the end of this season. I wouldn't extend Luiz beyond that, though.
No, I mean, let's have a think about it. So his contract ends June 30th. When do we expect the season to end? End of July, is it?
Yeah, I guess the end of July. There were some more games announced. The details of 3 more games were confirmed. So Wolves on July the 4th, Arsenal-Leicester on July the 7th, and the North London Derby is on July the 12th. And after that, we've only got 3 more games. So you're looking at...
26th of July is apparently the end date.
Well, there you go.
Arsenal-Watford.
Mm.
So... you're looking at a month on top of Luiz, 200 grand a week.
Is that how much he's on?
We think so. We think so. Certainly it's an element of the reporting around his earnings that has not been disputed vociferously.
Right. Gotcha.
I think it is a fair estimation. So let's say that costs you 800 grand. I mean, it's a lot of money. But what else can you do? You can't sign a player.
Can't buy a player.
So I think if Luiz is prepared to do that deal, he might be like, why would I do that deal if I'm not going to get an extension? I might get a cruciate ligament injury in that time, which means I don't get a new deal for next season. I think a lot, like Ryan Fraser at Bournemouth, for example, has told Bournemouth, I don't want to sign till the end of the season because I need to look after my future. He's leaving on a Bosman. I think it will cement Luiz's unpopularity rather among the Arsenal fans if he takes that choice. But it would be a potential choice.
Yeah.
But if it was in my hands, I would extend it for 4 weeks. Yeah. I know that people will find that crazy, maybe in the light of what we saw last night. But I just look at what else we have and the injuries we've picked up and the chance of picking up more injuries. And I think we might need somebody there. What I would say is, and I've got to be careful with wording this, but what we know about Luiz, and I'm sure what some people might have sort of inferred watching last night, is when he's not a happy bunny, you know about it. Mm. And you know about it on the pitch. You know, he was not happy, really, under Unai Emery, from what we understand, and that was reflected in his performances. When his relationship with the coach deteriorates, his performances tend to deteriorate as well. So it's only worth keeping him on if everything's okay, as okay with Arteta as he seems to suggest it is.
Yeah, I mean, he did say the coach is amazing. I think that's what he said in his interview.
I don't think his beef is with the coach, and I don't...
No.
Yeah, no, that's not my impression. But yeah, I mean, what about this question? Matt, who's at Matster4000, says, genuinely interested, which is always nice, rather than all those...
Pretend interested
questions we get. What would you go with as starting centre-backs for the rest of the season? And then as a side note, he says, and why wasn't holding on the bench last night? Surely he can't be worse than Luiz.
It's a good question. What would my starting centre-backs be? I mean, look, we've only got Mustafi and Holding. It's all we've got for the next game.
Mm.
That's it. Unless we play Zach Medley, which seems like throwing him in at the deep end.
Are we down to Mustafi and Holding now? Is that right?
Well, Luiz is suspended for two games because it's his second red card of the season. Socrates is out for a couple of weeks, as far as we know. Chambers, long-term injury.
Panos is out on loan.
Yeah, Mavropanos is on loan. And, you know, one of the questions we get a lot is, you know, if the season in France is over, can we bring in Saliba? No, we can't. He can't play for us until next season.
Even if we recalled him now, we couldn't register. We couldn't use him.
So,
to be honest, it wouldn't have blown my mind if Arteta had considered dropping Xhaka in there. But he can't.
Well, he can't, yeah. If Xhaka's going to be done for, well, we don't know how long, but if you're going off on a stretcher... unless he's a very, very quick healer, we could be without Xhaka for the rest of, you know, this season. What's left of it?
Well, it's a big opportunity for Rob Holding because he's not figured, has he, really, under Arteta in any meaningful way. And to be left out of the matchday squad, you know, obviously Ozil dominated that conversation, but that was not good for Rob Holding either.
So
from nowhere, he's going to get a chance. And... it's really difficult to make an assessment on him because we haven't really seen him.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But like sometimes the door needs to open for a player and he can take that chance and take that opportunity. You know, I think he looks, you know, the few times we've seen him this season, A, like a player who was badly affected by the injury, but also a player who lost a lot of confidence, either physically, mentally, whatever, or across the board. He looked a lot less confident than he was. And maybe, you know, some time out and everything else might help him recover. I don't know what choice we have at centre half now, other than Mustafi and Holding. I saw Mustafi go down injured. I think he was on the receiving end of a hefty enough sort of a tackle, and he was injured. There was certainly a scream that went up, and I was like, uh-oh. Now we've got no central defenders.
It was whatsoever. After the penalty.
So it was like, oh, fuck. But, you know, again, it comes back to this squad-building thing. You know, if this is what we've got at centre-half, the recruitment at centre-half has been really poor, you know? And all we can do is hope that Saliba is as real a deal as we want him to be.
No pressure, Billy.
Okay, look, we've got to go because we've been recording for ages and it's a busy day and I know you've got to do things, but just finally, Carl Craiglist, who's at Conroy_Bumpus, says, what bleach would you recommend while watching this team? I'm usually a Domestos guy, but I'm interested in the new craft scene. I'd like. So send us your favourite craft bleaches out there, folks.
I also liked this question from Lukey T at Gunnar's Talk, who says, do you think David Luiz hates trees? after Hector Bellerin pledged to plant, what was it, several thousand trees?
3,000 trees.
For every game Arsenal win. I mean, Arsenal are now very bad for the environment, and I don't just mean because they flew to Manchester. We need some trees, guys. Give us some trees at Brighton.
We need some trees, exactly. Hector Bellerin can put down some trees
Hector
for us.
Hector Bellerin, that's
there
lovely.
There we go. All right. Listen, thank you, everyone, for listening. Football is back. Let's delete this from the hard drive, but hopefully you can only delete it after you've listened to this podcast.
Don't delete the podcast.
Don't delete the podcast. Just delete the game.
That would be really annoying.
Exactly.
If we had to do this again.
Exactly. All right. We will. What are we doing? Yeah, we'll have one on Monday, won't we? Oh, I'll also have another podcast for you tomorrow, given it's regular Arsecast Friday. So we'll put something together for tomorrow. James and I will be here on Monday with an Arsecast Extra following the Brighton Tree Plantation game. So until then, look, folks, take it easy, and we will catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.